This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Okay, we are talking clean elections in Arizona today. We have two guests. The Clean Elections Commission is run by five appointed commissioners, one of whom is Amy Chan, who is here. And the other one is Tom Collins, who is the executive director, basically the top paid full-time staff guy.
That's basically, yeah.
That's my job. Welcome to the show, both of you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
I want to start with Tom. History, Clean Elections Commission, how did it come about?
Sure.
And then we'll get to what does it do.
Okay, sure. Well, how it came about in 1998, so about 21 years ago, voters in Arizona passed an initiative that created both the Clean Elections Act and the Clean Elections Commission to administer the act. That initiative came after a couple of things had happened here in Arizona. People who've been here a long time will remember the ASCAM scandal, which had been legislators essentially literally taking duffel bags full of cash from an undercover officer.
This was the low point of probably of Arizona legislative history.
Right. And
famous quotes like, I want to die rich.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you ever have a chance to kind of Google it up and look at some of the history, it was pretty ugly. We had one candidate who was a lawmaker who was out to get the concessions at some
shrimp concessions,
right,
at the casinos.
That's
yes.
Right. So so that had stuck around. I think that the whole right around 97 that continued in terms of the way the political coverage went. So in 97, the Republic did a huge takeout on the legislature called the Invisible Legislature, where it showed the lobbyist influence on the legislature. I mean, it was a multiple day kind of package. They just don't make anymore. Mm-hmm. And talked about things like, people sitting in the then Senate president's office and deciding who would be on the donate list and who would not be, that kind of thing. So you've got kind of this AF scam, kind of constant either drip or then some more explosive stuff. You had a lot of stuff in the air because Governor Symington was on trial right before this happened and had been convicted, and that conviction hadn't been overturned or the pardon hadn't happened. So there was just a sort of aura of sleaze, for lack of a better way of putting it, around Arizona politics. And I think that's why the voters voted in favor of clean elections.
Okay, Amy, what does the Clean Elections Commission actually do?
Well, we, as Tom alluded to, we administer the act as a commission, and there's five appointed commissioners who there's no true majority of anyone affiliated with any recognized party. So there can be no more than two Republicans or two Democrats or two independents.
Also not more than two from one county, if I remember correctly.
That's correct as well. They want to make sure that we don't have everybody from Maricopa or Pima. So we make sure we have people from rural areas as well as some of the more populated areas. So we administer the act, and that involves kind of the three aspects of the act, which are, providing public money so that candidates who want to run for legislature or state office without taking that special interest money, like lobbyist money, can do so without being beholden to special interests and not kind of having to take part in that culture of corruption or aura of sleaze that Tom alluded to, as well as really maintaining and reaching out to voters to educate them on how to participate in the process. We don't conduct huge scale voter registration drives, but we do a lot of voter registration activities around the state, and appreciate it when other, community folks do large voter registration drives as well. And then we also get involved in some campaign finance enforcement with regard to our own candidates, but also some independent expenditure issues. So, I mean, I talk a lot about dark money. That's kind of an issue that is sticking in my craw right now. So those are kind of broadly the three aspects that the commissioners take action on at our meetings.
One thing I wanted to ask you about The first of these is probably the most controversial, the public funding.
Sure.
There was a Supreme Court case some years back that the provision prior to that was that if somebody, say, I was running against you and I had private donations from wealthy people and I could blow you away with raising private funds, you as the recipient of public funds got matching funds up to a certain amount.
Right.
Supreme Court overruled that.
Yeah.
Right.
And my question to either of you is, what has happened since then? Has that had an impact on participation in the Clean Elections funding mechanism?
I don't know. Amy, do you want to take that or do you want me to?
Well, I think it has had an impact on some of the participation. I think it's made it a little more difficult for some of our statewide candidates. But Tom actually, you know, is really wonky about some of this stuff and probably has better numbers than I do. I think we still see a lot of people participating in the legislative arena with it. Of course, we'd like more. And I think that that Supreme Court opinion was unfortunate for the Clean Elections Commission, especially when you think about the fact that the whole intention of the voters and the writers of the act was to enable folks to actively participate in running for office if they wanted to without having to take private money. It really crippled people who want to do that when they're running in races that their opponents who are privately financed and are taking that private money from special interests get millions of dollars from either dark money, independent expenditures, or that sort of thing. And Tom, if you want to give some more details on that and any of your thoughts, go right ahead.
Well, I mean, I think that's all correct. I mean, I think that just to be wonky a little bit about it, what the mechanism in the statute that was passed by the voters did was exactly, Mike, what you were saying. It matched IEs and spending by your opponents if, you know.
IE is independent expenditures.
Yeah, sorry for the jargon.
We got a more general audience here.
Right. And so what the Supreme Court said was basically, and I don't agree with this decision, but it is what it is. The Supreme Court basically said that it placed a burden on other candidates' speech to if they spent money to give the clean candidates money.
The idea again was to make it more difficult for somebody with big money to overwhelm a clean elections candidate.
Well, I mean, I think that's what the court concluded, because they basically concluded this was an effort to quote unquote level the playing field in effect, and that's what the matching funds did. I don't think that's right. I don't think that's accurate. But nevertheless, the reality is that they did strike the provision, and then it moved to the legislative arena. And this is really a point that gets missed a lot in this history: is it moved to the legislative arena where what they had invalidated was the formula for giving out matching funds. So people were supposed to, as you noted, there was a cap on how much it could be matched to.
So you could blow somebody out of the water if you had really big money.
Regardless, and that happened when Tom Horn ran against Jaime Molera for the superintendent Republican nomination in 2002. That's literally what Mr. Horn did. He blew all those junctures and
do you remember what the limit was then, matching?
It was three times the original amount. So basically mm-hmm. – you know, that's the multiple that's missing. So mm-hmm. the legislature, which has never been
a fan of this.
Right. What they did was they ripped out the formula, but they didn't replace the act. They, in fact, repealed the funds available to those candidates. So right now, candidates are getting one-third the amount of money that they ought to be receiving in any remedy to the court case that is logical. Instead, we got this, oh, they don't like the spigot, so let's rip out the plumbing. Mm-hmm. And granted, they had an excuse to do it. I just don't think that they did it fairly. That having been said, there was an immediate drop off in the number of participants, but that number has steadied. I think we should talk later a little bit about what last year's proposition may do to participation in the clean funding program. But there are still folks who do it. And honestly, one of the things that I think will come to pass is, you know, if you look at last year's races and you look at a lot of the races we have, clean candidates are able to outspend without the overhead, traditional candidates. That's happened. And on the other hand, when a candidate chooses to run traditional, they need to evaluate their actual capacity. David Garcia ended up, without counting for overhead, raising $15,000 more than he would have received from the Clean Elections Fund had he run clean.
In other words, it would have been easy. It would have been better for him to take the clean election money. He wouldn't have to spend all that time raising money.
Exactly.
But, he of course, thought he was going to raise a lot more than that. The bottom fell out on him when it looked like he didn't have a chance.
Right. I agree with you about it. I mean, I'm not trying to make a political judgment. Yeah. I'm just simply saying that you have to have an Here's the deal. I mean, at the end of the day...
Can we hold that? We're running over. We'll be back in just a minute. We'll pick up on exactly that point when we return in just a moment in the Think Tank.
The Think Tank. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We've been talking to Amy Chan, who is one of the Clean Elections Commissioner, and Tom Collins, who's Executive Director of the Clean Elections Commission. And you were in a... middle of a point when I rudely cut you off.
Well, no, it wasn't at all. I think one point that I think candidates get hung up on, and this happens when they interact with their parties, this happens when they interact especially when they interact with consultants. When you go to a political consultant and say, do I need a political consultant? They're going to tell you yes. It's like walking onto a car lot and asking if I need a car.
It's also not usually a bad idea either.
Well, but the problem is that the one person who doesn't get paid as much out of clean elections is the consultant. So the consultants are always pushing candidates, don't run clean because your opponent's going to be traditional and you can't compete. The answer to that is almost always discussed in the abstract. You know, people down at the legislature, well, it doesn't work anymore because of the blah 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 matching funds. That's a simplified and almost irrational analysis because it never considers what your candidate's capacity to fundraise is and what your opponent's capacity to fundraise is and or what IEs are out there. Those are knowable things or at least predictable things.
But there's at least one consultant, Constantin Quinard, seems to have mastered the art of running clean election campaign. And by the way, we should make this point because I think this would otherwise be lost. You can't just say, I'm a candidate. Where's my check?
Right.
You have to.
Yeah. Amy, you want to go ahead?
You have to show that you do have some grassroots support. And the way the drafters of the Clean Elections Act wanted to ensure that was by having legislative and statewide candidates collect what we call $5 quals, which are $5 qualifying contributions. So let's say you want to run for the legislature as a clean candidate. You have to knock on doors around in your district and get $5 from a qualifying number of individuals and file that with the Secretary of State's office.
Isn't that 200 for a legislator? Is that 200 just to, so people get an idea of the level of effort required?
That's right.
And I say that seems like a very reasonable level to me. To get 200 people to give you $5, you have to be out there a bunch. On the other hand, it's doable on shoe leather at the legislative level.
That's right. I think that's right. And I think,
very.
Yeah. I mean, I
think it's good because, you know, not only are you showing that you're going to be, I mean, I don't want to say a legitimate candidate, but I mean, when you think of any candidate for any office, I mean, you cannot really be a viable candidate unless you do have some support, right? And so the drafters knew this. They said, hey, instead of just giving away money to any Tom, Dick, or Harry who walk up to us and want a check of public money, we're going to say, look, interact with your constituents, show them that you're going to be a candidate they want to support and get their $5 and therefore showing that you're a viable candidate. And that's the way it worked. And I think it's a great way to run things because it does encourage those candidates to get out there, meet their constituents. And I think they learn to enjoy it and really be a great representative of their district that way as well.
And they're allowed to do this. They're allowed to do this on the internet now. Am I correct? So you can do this virtually.
Yes, that's correct.
Yes.
In fact, it's very secure because you log on to the Secretary of State's website, you log in with your driver's license, you select the candidate that you want to give to, and then you enter in the information so I can run it through the voter registration database.
I want to ask this to Amy. I think it's outrageous. So we can do that. I can make my contribution online in favor of this any candidate for any office in Arizona. So obviously it's secure enough. But I can't sign an initiative petition online.
Well, I think the dichotomy there is you have legislators who are the policymakers who run for office. So they need I mean, I'm just going to throw this out there. I mean, there's always a self-interest there, right, with the policymakers. I don't think that generally a lot of the folks in leadership at the legislature appreciate many of the initiatives that they see come across the ballot. I mean, that's my only answer, is the self-interest of the folks who are the candidates and therefore then the policymakers. They see that it makes sense for them. It's also good for the voters, frankly, and the people who want to support them. But I think that many times the legislature has issues, the leadership, with the ballot measures.
And every year they seem to come up with another way to make it more difficult to get an initiative passed. Most recently they said, well, you can't pay anybody to pass petitions. So you can't can't do that. Frankly, if in the abstract, I thought that was good. My personal solution would be, I'd love your action on this, volunteers only, but cut the number of signatures required for initiative that it is doable for an initiative that has significant citizen report, but it's not overduly. In other words, I'd couple the elimination of paid petition passers with cutting the number of signatures down to a more manageable level.
Yeah. I mean, Tom and I actually knew each other when I worked at the Secretary of State's office years ago. And maybe we can talk about that when we come back from the break. But
thank you.
Yeah.
You heard the music, which means that we'll be back in just a moment. In the Think Tank, we will continue this discussion with Amy Chan, Citizen Election Commissioner, and Tom Collins, Executive Director, Arizona Clean Elections Commission, in just a moment.
The New Jerusalem.
The Think Tank. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We are talking all things clean elections. Our guests are Amy Chan, who is one of the Clean Elections Commissioner, Tom Collins, Executive Director of that same organization. I'd like to start with a question to you, Amy, about the selection of commissioners. I know that there are five commissioners and no more than two from a party, no more than two from a single county, which basically constrains this being Maricopa County dominated. And you're appointed by people from both parties who are in high office. I know you were appointed by, and this I found this, there's got to be a story in here somewhere. You were, because the normal assumption would be the Republican leaders will appoint Republicans, the Democrats will appoint Democrats. Well, you were a Republican appointed by Katie Hobbs, who was then the now Secretary of State, but who was at the time the majority leader of the Democrats in the state Senate.
Right.
Is there a story in there somehow?
Well, the only story is that it goes by state law as far as, you know, she had to appoint somebody who would be, I think, Tom, and you can correct me if I was wrong, either a Republican or an independent, because I believe at the time we had two Democrats already on the commission.
Oh, okay. So she was constrained there. What if there was some, if there was a kind of an out of sequence selection, it preceded Katie Hobbs' choice of you.
Right. But I mean, hopefully, I mean, I really have so much respect for her. And just because, you know, I'm a registered R, as I like to say, just, I don't know, I call them R's and D's for ease of reference. Just because I'm an R and she's a D, you know, I think we kind of see things in a similar light. We have a lot of similar values when it comes to integrity in our publicly elected officials, our, you know, campaign finance, and obviously clean elections. And I think that's probably why she selected me. I hope it wasn't, I don't think it was under protest that she appointed me as a Republican, if that makes sense.
So if somebody broke the sequence, it was somebody prior to Katie Hobbs in your instance. You probably know, Tom, who that was.
Governor Brewer appointed a Democrat toward the end of her term, who's still on the commission, is a lawyer in town named Damian Meyer. He's our immediate past chairman.
Uh-huh.
So that's what.
And
that
set up the
that's exactly the
sequencing issue.
And
you're staggered,
two.
Right? Now, are the terms staggered so that when somebody makes an appointment, there's only a single vacancy?
Well,
no.
That's it.
Brings up a great point, because we have Right. I think Governor Ducey still needs to make his appointment. Right. Our chairman from 2 years ago, Steve Titla, yeah. He, you know, his replacement has not been appointed. Mm-hmm. And Secretary Hobbs is slated to make an appointment to fill former Chairman Meyer's position. Yeah. And I think the thinking is that first Governor Ducey must appoint the person to fill the position of Chairman Titla. So
you're down to three commissioners right now, or?
The way the law is written, the background law on this is that if you don't get replaced, you essentially are a holdover, and you would have to formally resign.
I see. So you serve until your replacement is ready.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And so right now we have basically – but, you know, honestly, I mean, from my perspective, I mean, look, the staggering is great, and the generally five-year terms are great. Both Commissioner Titla and Commissioner Meyer started quite late. They started in the middle of a term that had already – you know, because of the timing, had already mm-hmm. begun. So – I think that creates some stability and some experience. I mean, you've now got – we have a chairman who's, you know, very capable, been on the commission for 4 years, whose name is Mark Kimball. He's from Tucson. And then we have the benefit right now of having two former chairpersons there.
Is there a requirement, as there is with the redistricting commission, that it not be somebody who was a party leader?
Correct.
And so you have to be somewhat removed from partisan politics.
Right. You can't have been a precinct committee person.
Or elected official.
I mean, that's the general rule. There may be other things that fall into different categories, but that's the general rule.
Amy.
I didn't feel bad. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask, in your experience, does the commission tend to act in a nonpartisan manner?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, knowing what the party registration is of each person, we don't always all agree, but I don't view it as being along party lines at all. It's more about personal experience in many cases, but mm-hmm. I feel like more times than not, we're very unified in how we approach things because we're following the law. We're following the policy of maintaining our integrity in our elections in the state of Arizona as much as we can from our position on clean elections, as well as, of course the commissioners are the appointed, you know, members of this commission, but under Tom's executive directorship, I mean, our voter education program has just become so strong and so vibrant. And I think you see that every commissioner for years, regardless of party affiliation, has really supported the mission of Clean Elections as mandated by the law, by the act itself. And I would encourage anyone listening, I mean, our meetings are all streamed live online. They're also archived online. You can definitely take a look if you're an election geek like I am. You might enjoy it or come downtown and attend. I mean, we're very approachable. I think the meetings are a great education in what we're doing, of course. So,
I have a question I've been dying to ask you, I think you are uniquely qualified to answer this question. Probably nobody else quite has the perspective on this, because in addition to being a commissioner, you were formerly elections director for the state of Arizona.
Yes.
And the elections director is appointed by a secretary of state who will always probably be either a Democrat or a Republican elected in a partisan elected who hires a state elections director.
Yes.
We also have this commission that, from everything you've said and everything, the way it was structured to be as nonpartisan as humanly possible.
Yes.
Wouldn't it make more sense for the state elections director to be part of the Clean Elections Commission rather than be somebody who was appointed by a partisan elected official?
You know, I've actually never even thought about that. I don't know. You know, our laws are structured in a way that the Secretary of State is our chief elections officer for the state. And the election director is the one who kind of administers that for the secretary. Now, in the past, like under Ken Bennett, who was the Secretary of State who hired me to be election director, and all the previous secretaries, that person was even if they were registered R or D in the past, I feel like those folks were, it's kind of like John McCain, if I could be so bold as to hope that we could all be like that, you know, country above party, state above party, you know, those folks were not political people, even though they were working for secretaries who were elected in partisan elections, if that makes sense.
Well, I think we've had some very, very good people who acted in a nonpartisan way as elections director. I must say, however, I think we're lucky in that the scenario that I described is, this isn't true in other states. I can think of Florida, for example. I think of other states where it hasn't worked out well, and we are dependent on that, on secretaries of state who continue to appoint people who are dispositionally independent, but just as a structure, it seems to me that we would like the administration, and I say this recognizing, of course, that elections are really run at the county level, but the elections director and in a broad sense, the secretary of state have overall kind of, I'm not quite sure how direct, the elections are run by the counties, but supervised or at least coordinated by the state elections director. And being in an independent commission there's a structure there, and it seems to me to be logical.
I don't disagree with you. I mean, in fact, when I was at the Secretary of State's office, this was not something that Secretary Bennett ever necessarily wanted to do, but it even occurred to us because we had a very good working relationship with Clean Elections at that time, which, you know, under Secretary Reagan wasn't always the case. And now that we have a new secretary, I think that's changing. But at the time, I really felt like it might be worthwhile to put all campaign finance at least under the Clean Elections Commission and maybe even beef it up to create some ethics rules and regulations. But, you know, you have to have the political fortitude in the state legislature to do that. And I don't think we've ever had that.
This is why we have citizen initiatives.
Right. Exactly.
To get things that most people would agree is reasonable, but would never pass muster with a partisan legislature.
Right.
Well, we'll break it at this point. We'll return in just a minute to conclude our discussion of clean elections in the think tank. And KTR will be back in just a minute.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, this is our wrap session on the Clean Elections Commission. Amy Chan, one of the commissioners, is here, as is Tom Collins, who I would like to ask a question about. In the last election, there was an initiative. It was kind of a wolf in sheep's clothing, because the initiative was ostensibly about something unrelated, but it had an element that put your commission, this independent commission that we've already established is, you know, not more than two people and five commissioners, not more than two from a party. So no party can dominate, about as non-partisan as you can get. Amy says it actually even works that way, which is nice to hear. But you are now put under some commission, I forget the name of which, but every member of which is appointed by the governor. In other words, it's unclear to me how much they direct your activities or what they can do, but talk to me about that.
Okay. What? Yeah, so this is just the historical note here is that the legislature, by a one vote, partisan vote, I should say, put on the ballot what became known as Prop 306. And it did two things, which we believe were separate, but the courts decided were not. They all related to clean elections. One, it prohibited candidates from spending money with political parties and 501A groups, so charities and others who might be involved in candidate elections. That was part one. And part two was to remove an exemption from aspects of the Arizona Administrative Procedures Act, including how we reported, if at all, to the Governor's Regulatory Review Council, which is the body you were describing.
I was thinking
of,
yeah.
Which is a, I would almost say, a hyper-partisan body. I mean, you have people on there who have expressed hostility to clean elections for decades before they got on there. You've got folks who are actually, I mean, in the past 2 years, you've had folks who are most famous for being dark money political consultants on GERC. It's a very it's a highly politicized.
And I would make the observation that when that thing was passed, the only thing that was discussed was the first element of that.
Well, right,
and not the second.
And that was the focus of the folks who backed this thing was this is about party, you know, cracking down on parties. And that sounds good. It also raises, and we haven't resolved yet, a number of constitutional questions about how parties are allowed to interact with their candidates. It's basically putting the commission right in the party's bank account to determine whether or not something is valid or not. And that's not necessarily consistent with the free speech and free association values that we so associate with our current legislature. I mean, they say free speech over to trump every kind of thing in the world, except when they have the opportunity to regulate speech, what they think of as speech, which is money. They jump right on it. So it's a very hypocritical bill. It was very undercovered by the legislature, legislative reporters at the time. I mean, there was no story on this during the session and maybe one during the election.
There were a lot of other things on the ballot. This probably fared differently than it would have been if this had gotten a lot of attention.
I think that's right. I think the other problem with it, and this is really where we'll be, you know, starting to discuss how we implement it. We've had some preliminary discussions with staff at GIRC, and we have a good working relationship with the staff at this body is called GIRC,
Governor's Regulatory Review
Council, mm-hmm. but everybody on the inside calls it GIRC. So. We've had good relationship with staff and et cetera. But, you know, the other thing they did is the voters, the people who backed this thing drafted it, they got rid of this so-called exemption but left all the other rules that the commission is to follow that are specific to the commission on rulemaking in place. So it's not at all clear which rules have to go to GIRC and which rules do not and when they go to GIRC. I mean, none of those things are apparent. I mean, we've talked to the staff about where those conflicts are, and we didn't resolve all those things yet. So right now, because there's nothing going on, there's not been anything. But the question of the scope and scale is questionable. How much we'll be able to reach agreement with GIRC is questionable. And the last thing I'll say is, and this is another bill that the press refuses to cover. Right now, there's a bill moving through the legislature. It's gotten out of the House and Senate. It's gotten out of the Senate Rules Committee, even though it's blatantly unconstitutional on the VPA, that somehow manages the folks who are running this bill manage to, quote, explain how they're amending Prop 306 to expand it, but somehow they're convinced that's not an amendment. It's just a connection. That's not how the VPA works. You can't supersede or expand the Voter Protection Act. The Voter Protection Act was passed by voters in 98, also to prevent legislative meddling that was uncalled for. This bill, 2724, sponsored by a guy named Leo Biasucci from Lake Havasu, who is not very capable of describing the bill, if you call him. But what it has the effect of doing is breaching both Prop 306 and the original Clean Elections Act. And we know that because another thing that has been undercovered is that in December, the commission position on its independent authority to enforce laws was vindicated by a Maricopa County judge in a case involving the state, the Secretary of State, GIRC, and us, in a lawsuit brought by the Arizona Advocacy Network, several Democratic lawmakers who thought the VPA had been violated, et cetera. So you're seeing what's happening.
What's the status of this legislation?
Well, it needs to go through the Senate still, and then it would need to go back to the House for concurrence. But I can tell you,
it's passed the House.
It's passed the House once.
Stuff.
It's passed House once, gotten out of rules. The rules attorneys in both houses thought there were problems. Then the very lobbyist who's pushing this bill wrote an amendment to fix the constitutional problem. That's a guy named Scott Musi, who's famous. You should Google him. You know, he runs the Free Enterprise Club, which is the most famous dark money group in Arizona. The bottom line is that he wrote the amendment then to fix his own constitutional problems. But the rules attorney in the Senate still says it's a reasonable argument there's a VPA problem. My point is that the legislature is passing these bills and saying, well, let the courts figure it out, rather than actually analyzing them. And that's in part because there's no public attention paid to clean elections, and the press has decided that clean elections is not worth writing about. Meanwhile, you've got people like Terry Goddard and Chris Hurstam and others who are out there saying, boy, wouldn't it be great if we had somebody who could enforce some of these laws? Hmm. I mean, even the – so in other words, even the liberal intelligentsia doesn't pay attention to clean elections. It's a bizarre tick.
Just something being missed.
Yeah.
Question for you, Amy, on a last subject I did want to get. There were a number of bills in the legislature this time that mm-hmm. looked like it would make it harder to vote. Purging of voter rolls, mm-hmm. banning paid people from registering voters other than party officials. I wonder about the constitutionality of that one. Change voter ID requirements and the like. Which of these is of greatest concern to you, given the mandate of Clean Elections to expand participation?
It's probably hard to narrow it down. I mean, the bill that was most on my radar was bills that would purge people who are signed up for the permanent early voter list if they don't participate in an election or two. I'm not sure what the final version is, but as well as, you know, limiting the use of emergency vote centers. I think any of these barriers that are erected are going to tend to discourage people from voting. And one thing that I've been appalled by is I think we actually had a GOP congressman, maybe the majority leader, if I'm not mistaken, saying the more people that vote, the worse it is for our elections, meaning the Republican elections. And I imagine that must be part of what's driving the GOP focus on erecting these barriers at the legislature, which is disheartening to me, because to me, the voters are the ones who matter. It's their voices and their votes that matter. So anytime we're going to remove people from getting their early ballot automatically mailed to them as they expect on this permanent list, or remove the ability to vote the weekend before an election, if they say to themselves, that's what I need, that's a problem. And we're limiting the votes to elect the candidates of their choice. So I think that's just a disgrace, frankly.
Tom, you got the last word. Maybe 20 seconds. What do we need to know about clean elections that we don't?
I think the last thing we would say is keep on our website, azcleanelections.gov. It's a great website. It's got all the election information you need. It's been recognized around the state and the country for being the best single stop for election information. It's just part of all the voter education opportunities we offer.
Thank you very much. Amy Chan, Commissioner of the Arizona Clean Elections Commission and its Executive Director, Tom Collins. You can find our shows archived at ktar.com, the older ones at michaelneal.org. See you next week in the Think Tank.